Let me begin by just reminding you why this is even important. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. You wouldn't be here if you didn't think it was important to go to Israel. But I've been struck by the fact that as I prayed in my prayer, so much of human history has played out on that little piece of land. You understand the land of Israel today is really about the size of the state of New Jersey. And so it is not geographically important in the sense of its size, the order of magnitude. It is geographically important for two reasons. One, because of where it's placed. It is, if you look at a map, and we'll go through this the next time we meet, I'll unfold this a little more. But if you look at a map, you'll discover that before there was airplane travel, you had three continents of the ancient world. You had Europe, you had Asia, and you had Africa. And those three continents were all connected by a tiny little land bridge called the Land of Israel. You didn't really want to travel on the Mediterranean a lot of the year because of the weather and the problem with sailing. On the eastern side was the Sahara. You didn't go there. So there's this tiny little bridge of land that is literally the land bridge in the ancient world that connects the three great continents of the ancient world. That's one of the reasons this piece of land was important. The second reason relates to that one, and that is God chose to plant his people right there. Why? Because they were to be his witness nation to the world. They were to be the ones who were to put him on display. And so he plants them right in the middle, the hub of ancient civilization and the path through which all of the ancient armies, all of the ancient travel, all of the trade routes, everything ran through that little strip of land, no bigger than the state of New Jersey. But that's why we're going, is because that's where God chose to put himself on display. And you see that from the very beginning. When you get past universal dealings in Genesis 1 through 11, you get to Genesis 12. You may not have your Bible with you, but if you have it with you, Genesis 12, God calls Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees, out of paganism. He rescues, he saves him. And this is what he says to him. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And that's how it began. That's how the story began to unfold on that little piece of land. But it ends on that little piece of land as well. Flip back to Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 14 talks about the coming day of the Lord, the second coming. Zechariah 14:1, behold, a day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. And the city shall be taken and the houses plundered and the women raped. Half of the city shall go out into exile, but the rest of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle. On that day, his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from the east to the west by a very wide valley, and so forth. And down in verse 9, and the Lord will be king over all the earth. On that day, the Lord will be one and his name one. So the story begins in every sense in terms of a specific people whom God would choose to put himself on display, one family out of all the nations on earth, Abram and his descendants. And he says, I'm going to put you on a piece of land. And the story ends in the second coming with, I'm going to come back to that piece of land. And so it is really a remarkable thing when you think about human history unfolding everywhere, that that's where God chose to put his name on display. And so it's a wonderful thing that we get to go there and enjoy it together. Look around you. This is part of the group we'll be going with. They're a total at this point, and I think it's going to end here. We do have a waiting list if some aren't able to go. But we're going to end, I think, at 92, which is the number that are registered and have put down a deposit. 92, that's two buses. which is more than manageable. The first time I went to Israel, I was responsible for a group from Grace to You. We took 425, I think it was. So 92 is manageable. And the group we're working with, you need to know as well, is a group that I worked with from those early days. They sort of are the premier organization in terms of trips for evangelical Christians. They do all the trips for Grace to You, all the trips for Chuck Swindoll, all the trips for David Jeremiah, etc. So they have a long history in that. I've worked with them from the very beginning. We worked together to arrange that first trip. That's when they first started getting into Israel back in those days. And I really appreciate their work. They do. I'm confident in them, as confident as you can be in any human. But I'm grateful for them, and I think you will be as well before we're done with all that's coming. So that's kind of the background. Any questions about all of that before I tell you kind of where we're going today? All right. Here's what we're going to do today. You have some materials I've already given you. I have one piece of material I've held back. You know, I taught college, and I learned a lesson when I taught college, English and Bible, is don't tell your students, don't give them everything you're going to say, or they don't pay attention. And so you don't have everything I'm going to say. You'll get it later. But we're going to start by just walking through an order of what we're doing. I want to give you some specifics on that front, and you have a sheet that does that. And then I'll walk you through some recommended materials that are important for you to have. Then we'll look at that little booklet you have that says Israel Trip 2014. And then there's one other important piece of information we'll spend some time walking through, and that's practical preparation for the trip, which is one of the main things that I really want to get to today. So the big picture is I want to cover sort of, okay, what do you do? How do you prepare yourself spiritually? How do you prepare yourself in terms of what you need, et cetera, for the trip over the next few months? And then we will have one more meeting, Lord willing, probably late summer, early fall. I don't want to do it too soon, but we'll have another meeting where I'll begin to introduce you to the land. We'll kind of walk through. I'll show you some pictures. We'll begin to look at the land and how it's set up. It's kind of a study, a beginning study of the land itself, so that when you get there, you already have a little bit of a running start, and you're not sort of picking up from scratch, okay? So does that make sense? All right. So take that sheet that says Israel 2014 11-day tour, and let me just kind of walk you through that so you know what to expect. And you've seen, I think, some of this before, but the first day is just a flight, a very long flight. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have flown on a 10-hour or more flight? Okay, good. We got mostly folks who've done that before. So you understand. We'll talk a little bit about, for those of you who haven't, we'll talk about preparing for that and what's good to do and not do for that. But basically, it's a long trip. There's no way to get around it. We'll fly into Tel Aviv, Ben Gurion Airport, and then we'll be picked up at the airport by the buses that we'll be on, two very nice buses for the time we're there. And we'll be taken right away to the hotel there in the Tel Aviv area. And you'll have a chance to get settled, and it'll be dinner time. And we'll have dinner. And it says orientation meeting. That orientation meeting will be very brief orientation, because otherwise you'll all be comatose. And, you know, so it'll just be just a time really to sort of say what we're doing the next day and pray together and get you to bed. Then things really heat up, beginning on, so you fly into Tel Aviv on day two. This is Tel Aviv there by the coast. And then when we get up the next day, we start our touring for the first day, and we start right near Tel Aviv in the ancient town of Caesarea. Caesarea there on the coast, Caesarea Maritima, where the Romans had their primary station. For the most part, they didn't live in Jerusalem. The Roman governors preferred to stay over on the coast. It was cool. It was away from the Jewish population. And so they built a magnificent city. You can see there. We'll actually go into that theater. And so you'll go in Caesarea by the sea. By the way, this is where, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but this is where they discovered the first archaeological reference to Pilate. You know, skeptics are always questioning the Bible. Oh, well, no, that person didn't exist. That person didn't exist. Of course, everything has eventually been proven true. And Pilate was one of the ones they attacked. Well, they found a reference, as you would expect, to the Roman governor Pilatus in this city. There's a marker there. But anyway, so we'll look at the aqueducts that are there, how they piped in water. And from there, we'll go up to Megiddo. Megiddo, Mount Carmel, that's where the Battle of Armageddon will be fought. There's a massive plain up there. I don't mean P-L-A-N-E. I mean P-L-A-I-N. And we'll go up on Mount Carmel where Elijah was with the prophets of Baal. There's a big overlook up there. And that's an interesting day. Caesarea, Mount Carmel, and Armageddon, and Megiddo. And then we'll move that first day. So we'll only stay one night in Tel Aviv. That's the night we fly in. And then you'll load up your things, we'll get on the bus, and we'll have a day of touring, which ends at Tiberias. Tiberias is on the Sea of Galilee. And I think you already know this, but the Sea of Galilee is a bit of a misnomer. That's kind of a biblical name we call it, but it's a lake. Okay, don't think massive sea. It's a conquerable lake. And so we'll be staying in Tiberias, a Roman town with ancient roots on the Sea of Galilee. And we'll have dinner there. I don't know yet. I don't think it's been finalized. I don't think the hotel that we're going to be staying in. But there are a couple nice hotels there. And we'll be staying in one of those. Then from there, of course, we'll branch out to see the Galilee region. On day four, we'll go to the Mount of the Beatitudes, where we'll have, as you see there, a teaching time. We'll try to insert in several of these sites a place where, in addition to the guide, in many of the sites, I'll also have something to say relative to tying it to the Scripture. But we have, let me tell you about our guides. We have been able to secure the same guide that we had the last time we were in Israel, who came highly recommended to me. You have to have, if you have a group of our size, you are required to have a licensed Israeli guide. But what we have done is found in those licensed Israeli guides a gal who is a believer. She belongs to a church in Jerusalem, and so Naomi's her name, and then she is arranging for us for a second guide on the second bus that that we can enjoy and that she can work with well. So they'll be our guides throughout. They'll give us a lot of the background, the history, the cultural atmosphere, etc. You'll find them to be enjoyable. And then in addition to that, I'll be making comments along the way. We'll go to the Mount of Beatitudes, as you see there, where there's a teaching time, the area around where Christ undoubtedly taught the Sermon on the Mount we've been studying. One of my favorite spots comes on day four, and that is Capernaum. You see this, this is the synagogue in Capernaum. Now the stones, the white stones that you see, are probably from a first or second century synagogue. But it is built, and you can see it in person when you get there, it's built on darker basalt stones, which date to the time of Christ. In other words, they rebuilt the synagogue where Christ taught and ministered after it was destroyed, but it's built on the same spot, on the same stones. So it's a remarkable place. You will find, let me just warn you, there are lots of sites in Israel that have been destroyed by the Catholic Church. You know, they built a massive, ugly, gaudy sort of thing over something you wish you could have seen in its pristine value. Capernaum is not one of those. Capernaum is still largely undeveloped. And as you can see here, you go there and you get that first century feel. The Sea of Galilee's right there, Capernaum. You see Peter's house. They built a church over it, but at least it's above it, so you can go down and look at what is almost certainly Peter's house in the city of Capernaum. There are definitely those kinds of sites that are almost certainly the sites from the time of Christ. There are others that are mere tradition. We'll try to differentiate those, but there are some of those. The ones that mean the most to me are the ones that are clearly the sites. Tabgha, the church of St. Peter, as it's called, St. Peter's Primacy. Bethsaida, Gadara. And then we'll have lunch at En Gev. It's there on the Sea of Galilee, and we'll have, you know, St. Peter's fish, as it's called, out of the Sea of Galilee. And then they pulled out, this is a fascinating part for me, you see Jesus' boat, they pulled out of the mud of the Sea of Galilee, one time when the water level was really low, a boat from the first century. And it's largely intact. I mean, it's pretty amazing to see what it was like and see it sort of there in the museum. And so that's a fascinating thing as well. It'll give you a fresh glimpse into all those stories of the boats and Jesus on the Sea of Galilee. And then we'll have our group dinner. And then there are often, you'll see these optional experiences. That's, if you choose to do it, it's extra. It's something you can include if you'd like. What is included, I probably should say this up front, what is included, I think you got this from the information you have, is it's all inclusive, the price you're paying, your flights, your hotels, your meals, two meals a day. If you want, when we're traveling, you can bring a snack, you know, something you want, or there will be an opportunity for you to buy us, you know, a light lunch wherever we are. That the light lunch is the part that isn't included, in addition to any optional trips you see here. And the third thing would be any souvenirs, of course, which I'm sure you'll want to do. So, all right, day five. So we'll stay in the Galilee. We'll be in the Galilee area on day five, but we'll go north from Galilee. Instead of right around the Sea of Galilee, which is where we'll be on day four, we'll go up to the Golan Heights. You've heard that name. When you've been there, you will understand why Israel has to have that land. It's this massive cliff looking down on their major fresh water supply, the Sea of Galilee. You can't have an army, you know, another army sitting up there on that hill looking down at your, you know, your one of your main water supplies. So we'll go to the Golan Heights. We'll go up to Dan. You've heard the phrase in the scripture, from Dan to Beersheba, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. We'll go to Dan. It's the far north. Jordan means the river Dan. And so it starts, its headwaters are up in Dan. And so we'll go up there. The really fascinating part about Dan is there is, and I'll show you this our next meeting, there they have come up with, and in archaeological digs, they have found the altar that was built there, the altar by Jeroboam for the false worship. And so you'll see they've got the base of that altar, and they've reconstructed out of metal, kind of a metal frame, what the altar itself would have looked like. So when you talk about the horns of the altar, you'll see what that was all about. And the high place, there's a high place there you read about in the Old Testament. So it's pretty fascinating to get to Dan and to see that sort of unfold. Caesarea Philippi, of course, that's where Peter made his famous pronouncement, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And we'll also ride across the Sea of Galilee. That's a wonderful experience. We'll get a chance to be out there, to sing together, to read the scripture together. It's a wonderful experience. So that's day five. Day six, we travel from Galilee down the Jordan Rift to Jerusalem. And we do some touring along the way. Beit Shan is a great stop. It is a Roman city, existed in the time of Christ. You don't read about it in the New Testament because, of course, the Jewish people didn't go into Roman cities. And so it's not mentioned, but it was there. And they have done massive archaeological digs and renovation of that city. You'll get to be exposed to a large Roman city in Beit Shan, and to see the major features of a Roman city, the theater, the baths. We'll actually tour a Roman bath there. You'll really love Beit Shan. It's another one of my favorite stops. Gideon Springs, the place where, you know, Gideon sorted out his soldiers. We'll drive by Jericho. We won't stop there, but you'll get a chance to see Jericho. And we'll end day six with an overlook of the city of Jerusalem. So we'll actually come on day six into Jerusalem in the late afternoon, and we'll have an overlook. You'll sort of get acclimated to the city of Jerusalem, and then we'll go to our hotel there in Jerusalem. By the way, that is the Jordan Rift Valley. So you can see the barrenness of it in that little river weaving its way down through the middle of the land. We will actually drive a route that runs right along the Jordan River all the way down. There will also be a chance, I think it will be on, I'll have to double check. I think it's on day six when we will have an opportunity for those of you, if you have not been baptized as a believer, there'll be a chance for, I think, a baptism in the Jordan. We don't do redos, you only need to be baptized once. So if you want to get wet in the Jordan, have at it. But if you haven't been baptized, you want to be baptized, then I can talk with you, and I'd want to hear your testimony before that, and know that that's what you want, and then we would do that at the Jordan, in the Jordan. I will tell you, though, you have to be willing to have little fish nibbling at your ankles and things like that. I've done this before, and it's not quite as pleasant as a baptistry. But it is more meaningful, I'll give you that. All right, day seven, we will not, now this frustrates some people, because you get to see Jerusalem when we pull into Jerusalem that afternoon on day six, but we're not going to stay in Jerusalem on day seven. There's a reason for all of this, it works out better, but basically day seven, we'll go down from Jerusalem, we'll drive down to the Dead Sea region. We'll go to Masada. While that is not specifically part of the biblical history, except for the fact that Herod had a palace there, you'll get to see that. It's a large part of Israel's history and Jewish history. An amazing, amazing story of courage and withstanding of the Roman army. You can stand on the top of Masada, and you can see the campgrounds the Roman legions built. They're still recognizable from the top of Masada when they captured it. So. And the ramp they built to get up to it as well. And for those of you who are energetic, you will potentially have the opportunity to climb up there as opposed to take the lift. The rest of us will be on the cable car heading up. All right. Also, we'll go to En Gedi, to Qumran. Qumran is, you remember, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And so we'll get a chance to see that. And then for those of you who would like, there's the Dead Sea Swim, or probably better called the Dead Sea Float. How many of you have been in the Dead Sea? Okay. What happens when you get in the Dead Sea is you don't sink, because it has such a high salt content and mineral content that, you can literally sort of float on top of the water. Half your body's out of the water. If you're lying on your back, think half your body out. So you can, people take newspapers in and sort of ham it up. So you can do that. I will say that if you have sensitive skin, it is very hard on your skin. So just be aware of that because of all the mineral stuff. But you can bring a swimsuit to do that. That night after dinner, and I would suggest you consider this one if you have enough energy. The Western Wall Tunnel Tours, that is definitely worth doing. The Western Wall, or the Wailing Wall as it's sometimes called, that's part of the platform. We'll talk about this next time. That's part of the platform that Herod built to hold the temple and all that was on top. Think of it as an upside-down shoebox he built across the top of a hill to support this massive temple complex. And so you can go down. That wall is the retaining wall, is what it is, the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall. It's not part of the temple. It was completely destroyed. It's part of the retaining wall that surrounded that hill on which the temple was built. But it's got a series of tunnels under there. You can go down and see there's a stone that's the size of like a boxcar that they put underneath to support the temple and its weight. It's really a remarkable engineering feat. Day eight, we are actually in the city of Jerusalem. We'll be staying in Jerusalem each of the nights, starting with night six. But on day 8, we will actually tour in Jerusalem. We'll begin on the southern steps. That's the southern steps of the Temple Mount. So, you know, when we talk about the temple, you understand that the temple was destroyed. But the Temple Mount is that artificial platform Herod built to support the temple. And the steps that lead up to the top of that mount where the temple was are there. They have been recovered. Very steps that Jesus and the disciples walked up and down many times to get into the temple. And we'll have a little meeting there on the southern steps. And then we'll see the western wall. We'll go up, Lord willing, and you pray about this because, you know, the Muslims control the top of the Temple Mount. And they are, you know, not always easy to work with in terms of when they open it, when they close it, and can be pretty willy-nilly. So pray that that'll be open, but we'd like to get up on the Temple Mount, give you a chance to see, you know, what's up there and sort of orient you to the size. You'll be shocked at the massive size of that platform on which Jesus and the disciples and all of them gathered when the temple was up there. We'll go to the Jewish quarter, which is kind of a exposure to the modern city and probably some shopping in a number of these places. The city of David. We'll have lunch in the old city. This is a fascinating time. Basically, the old city is the old medieval city of Jerusalem with tiny little winding streets and all of these little bazaars and shops and eateries and, you know, everything else. It's overwhelms your senses, but it's a lot of fun. And then the afternoon will be free time to use however you want there in the city of Jerusalem. And then again, the Western Wall tunnel tours in the old city, if enough people sign up that they need to do it twice. Day 9, we'll be in Jerusalem again, and this time sort of the end of the life of Christ begins. We'll go to the Mount of Olives, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane, the Shepherd's Field on the Jerusalem side. We'll go to the Shrine of the Book. That's where you'll see the Isaiah scroll that was found at the Dead Sea at Qumran. Other amazing findings. There's a model city you've seen on my slides sometimes on Sunday night. There's a model city of the ancient city of Jerusalem, which is really helpful to orient you in terms of the scripture. It's probably about the size of these tables altogether. So it's a nice size to orient you to the whole city. The Holocaust Museum, obviously a very moving experience. We'll probably go through. There's a main Holocaust Museum, and then they have what's called the Children's Holocaust Museum. One of the most moving experiences there is walking through, you know, a million children were killed in the Holocaust. And as you walk through that, there are a million points of light. They've engineered it so you're in the dark, but there are these million points of light. And as you walk through, there are the names of the children being read and their ages. Very moving experience there. And then dinner. And then day 10, the final day, the sites related to the crucifixion and resurrection. The upper room, the traditional site, probably not the real site, but in that area of the city. The Antonio Fortress, the Via Dolorosa, and so forth. The Garden Tomb, this is what you see here in front of you. It's the real site of the crucifixion and the resurrection is almost certainly the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We'll talk about that. But as I told you, the Catholics have built this sort of monstrosity over it. You have to go, you have to see it, because it's almost certainly an authentic site. But then you can go to the Garden Tomb, which is a tomb of the general time period, probably a little later, but it gives you more of the feel of what the Garden Tomb would have been like in the time before the Catholics built the Church of the Holy Sepulchre over it. So it's, and we'll have communion there together. Be a great time, a great way to finish up our time, and then a farewell dinner, and we depart for the airport. And then, of course, day 11 is the flight home. So any questions about sort of what we're going to be doing, the overall plan? Not really. I mean, I think when you get down to the Dead Sea, typically it's a little warmer. And in addition to that, You don't have to stay in a long time. It's just for the experience. But the water's not going to be frigid because it's going to be, you know, they'll be coming off their dry summer season. So even if the air is a little cooler, the water will not have a chance, I don't believe, unless they have an unusually cool October, to have really cooled down. But we'll play it by ear. Anything else? Yeah.
The tunnel tours, are there different tours? I mean, you have two nights. Is it the same tour, or are there other various tours you can go on and see different things?
No, typically we have two nights. That second one is optional if we need it. In other words, we have too many people sign up. There really is only one tour, one area that's open. What's fascinating is, and you'll discover some of this, there are more areas of tunnels under the Temple Mount than we're going to be allowed to go in. That would be fascinating, but we can't do that. But we will see what they allow us to see, and it's fascinating. It's definitely worth doing if you're able to do it.
The optional tours, will we be able to pay for those with a credit card?
I'm sure you will.
Okay, and then one other thing for the ladies, do not have anything metal on your bathing suit, it will ruin it.
Yeah, that's true. If you have anything metal on your bathing suit in the Dead Sea, it will definitely ruin it. It is very hard mineral water. Nothing like you've ever experienced. So it's fascinating, but don't wear anything that matters too much to you. Don't take your nice, clean, white bathing suit. It will never be white again. Yeah, there is, but rinse off is what it is. You'll want, when we get back to the hotel, that'll be the end of the day. When we get back to the hotel, you'll want to get a shower before dinner as well. Yeah, there are showers there, though, and so forth. They'll prep you for all that. But it's fun to do once, okay? I've done it. Do I want to do it again? No. But it is fun to do once. The bottom is incredibly slippery because it's a clay, you know, mineral content, and then the water itself is unlike anything you've ever experienced. You know, that's something I'll have to find out because I didn't check for this time around, and I'm sure the prices from last time, I'm sure those have changed. So I'll have to find that out, Ken. Sorry, I don't know that. But, you know, they're going to, well, I'll see if I can find out and let you know, okay? Yeah, no, we're going to keep it to two buses. I went back and forth on two buses. We did one bus last time. But because I was mentioning to some folks earlier, as I understand it, I haven't been over there since this happened, but as I understand, something pretty seismic has happened in the travel industry since I've been there, and that is they now have come up with these personal listening devices, like a little earpiece that tunes into the frequency of the tour guide. Well, the beauty of that is, in the past, you couldn't let your group get too big, or the people in back couldn't hear the tour guide, because you can't have a loudspeaker, you know, you can't do that. So basically, it's only to whatever extent the tour guide can speak, the loudness they can speak. But with this, essentially, with a group this size, you know, if you're tuned in the frequency, you're anywhere in the proximity, you're going to be hearing your tour guide. And so you don't have to see her every moment she's speaking. In fact, you probably don't want to do that. You probably want to be looking around a little bit. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. And so I don't have a problem going to two buses. And they were kind of, inspiration was saying, you know, it shouldn't be a problem. I'm just uncomfortable. Two buses is plenty. And what we'll do is Rocky has graciously agreed to be on one bus. I'll be on the other. And then we'll kind of rotate back and forth, and I'll take turns. Plus, we'll all show up at the same sites together. So, you know, by the time we're done, we'll all have plenty of togetherness. So, all right. Other questions? All right. Next thing I want you to do is take that sheet that says recommended study material. You see it there? Let me just run down through this. Now, some of you are not readers. Okay, don't worry about it. But if you are a reader and you'd like to prepare and read and get some exposure, that's what this is for. This has been put together from two resources primarily. One of them is Doug Bookman, who's been many times to Israel. and the other one from Todd Bolin, who actually was a part of the Master's College IBEX extension in Israel and has taken a lot of pictures. I'll talk about that in a moment. But anyway, so these suggestions come from those sources. Let me just highlight a couple of things. First of all, you see the Bible geography section. If you don't get anything else to kind of expose you to the land of Israel, you might consider this. This would be the number one resource. If you didn't get anything else, consider getting this. It's the Moody Atlas of Bible Lands. You see it there under number one, some suggestions as to what might be helpful. And the most strongly recommended is the Moody Atlas of Bible Lands by Barry Beitzel. And you can pick that up online. If there's enough interest, maybe we should get a few copies for the bookstore as well. But I would recommend you get that. There's some websites. Obviously, those are free. If you want sort of a history of Israel, both Old and New Testament, I mentioned, down under number two, and actually under number three, there's a misprint there. I think I didn't get it under the right heading there. The aerial views of the Old Testament and New Testament are under the history of ancient Israel. In addition to, and that's online, you just go to our website, and go search for aerial view of the Old Testament or aerial view of the New Testament. I did the Old Testament in 6 messages. I know you guys don't believe I can do that, but I did. I did the intertestamental period in 1, the period, the 400 silent years between the Testaments. And then I did the New Testament in 6 lessons. So if you want sort of an exposure to the history, that's not a bad option for you to do. Also, and I didn't bring it with me, but I've mentioned it several times, if you want to read through the gospel records, if you want to sort of connect with the gospel records as you plan on going, get the Thomas and Gundry, the one that's mentioned there, Stanley Gundry and Robert Thomas, A Harmony of the Gospels. That's very helpful. And then there's some resources about modern Israel. That is a helpful thing for you. I brought, and you can look at these afterwards. I'll have them down here in the front. There are a couple of others on page 2. There's the Moody Atlas of Bible Lands. It's here. The Geography of the Bible by Dennis Bally. You're not going to be able to get that, so don't worry about that one. I think it's out of print. Bill Schlegel, who teaches at the IBEX program, the Master's College IBEX campus in Israel, has done a satellite Bible atlas, satellite pictures of Israel that sort of give you an exposure. You can glance through that. That's a helpful little resource. And then the other one that's mentioned there, the Zondervan NIV Atlas of the Bible. You can look at that as well. I'll have them all up here afterwards. You can glance at those and see which you like. You know, if there's one that appeals to you more than another. Under Old Testament surveys, Kingdom of Priests is a little technical. If you want technical, you can get that. But the one I would recommend if you want to read about Old Testament survey is that Leon Wood, A Survey of Israel's History. That is excellent and very devotional, but very scholarly as well. So if you want to read some on Old Testament history, you can do that. If you want to read kind of a Jewish view of modern Jewish view of their faith, you wondered, so what do modern Jews believe? This is really, really good. You'll recognize, those of you who are readers, will recognize the name Herman Wouk, or Woke, however you like. This is My God. Basically, he wrote this, and you can see it down there under Customs and Manners of the Ancient Near East on page 3. It is very well written. Essentially, he wanted his friends to understand his sort of strange life. And so he wrote this book to say, here's what, as a modern Orthodox Jew, we believe. So that is, it'll give you insight into where they're coming from, the Jewish people that you'll see and rub shoulders with in Israel. The last thing that I would mention to you that's not on these sheets, you can add it. You don't need to do this before we go, but one of the great parts of going to Israel is capturing the pictures of where you've been. And you'll want to do that. You'll want a good camera. You'll want to capture the pictures yourself. But you're not going to capture it in all the different seasons of the year. You're not going to capture it from all the best vantage points. And so, having been and taken lots of pictures several times now, I enjoy my own pictures. But I would strongly suggest that you consider, once you get back, purchasing this. It is called the Pictorial Library of Bible Lands. The Pictorial Library of Bible Lands. It is 17,000 high-quality photographs from all the different times of the year, all the different biblical sites. It's taken by Todd Bolin, that professor I told you about at the IBEX campus in Israel. He lived there and is a great photographer. And it'll even be from sites that we don't go. And the beauty of it is they're all cataloged and marked. They're put in a PowerPoint presentation deal where it tells you what it is, tells you what we think happened there, is it legit or not legit. So all of them are footnoted and documented. So it is really helpful. You can get them at BiblePlaces.com. BiblePlaces.com. And I don't get any commission, by the way. I just want you to know that. It really is that good. When you see on Sunday night, I share pictures when we're going through Mark or whatever, a lot of them come from this. Because I like my own pictures, and you'll want to do that, but these are really good pictures taken at the best times of the year, best time of day, you know, all those things. So if you're going to invest in a trip to Israel, I would seriously consider this. I don't know how much he's charging now. You can find it on the website. We might be able, if you're interested, just out of curiosity, let's say we could get them for 17,000 pictures. We could get them for, I hate to say this because I'm not sure I can do this, but let's say we get them for $150. How many of you would be interested? Okay. What I might do is contact. Don't do anything yet. Maybe I'll contact him and say, look, you know, what kind of deal can we do if we're buying a, you know, in mass? So I'll let you know, okay? Don't do it now, but it really is helpful. All right, those are the resources. Any questions about any of that? Now, again, don't feel pressure to do this, but I'm just telling you, if you do a little preparation, you're going to get more out of the trip. If you just show up cold, you're not going to get as much as if you do some preparation. With that in mind, take a look at this little booklet. Israel Trip 2014. I'm not going to walk through this, but this is great. It's broken into three parts. Let me just show it to you. Notice on the first page, there's a focus one, the geography of the land of the Bible. You see that? Okay, on the first page. There's a box. It says Focus 1, the geography of the land of the Bible. That will be great because it will introduce you to the land and why that land and kind of a little overview of the land. Now flip back to, and it'll give you routes and all of that, the history of Jerusalem. Now go back to after Bible geography, page 32. There's a new page that begins, page 1, overview of Old Testament history and the biblical narrative. You see that? It's a chart. Looks like this. Has the number 1 on it, right after page 32 of Bible geography. That'll give you an overview of Old Testament history. There are several pages there. That just kind of gives you, because that Old Testament history is where most people struggle. Go to the end of that section. After page 6 of that section, it says Moses, the prophets, and me. And again, it has the box, and it says focus number 3, the mighty acts of God, the historical narrative of the Old Testament. And this is just to give you an overview of how the Old Testament unfolds, because that's where most people, again, struggle. Okay? So you can read through that. It's very helpful. But we're not going to cover it here. I'll cover some of those things in our next time together, but not in that form. All right. Any questions about any of that? All right, Evelyn, could you help me? Let's get those things passed out now. Maybe a couple of you guys could help me distribute these. This gets to some of the practical preparation side of it, and I want you to know what you need to be doing as you prepare. Any questions from what we've covered so far? Nothing. Okay. All right. What's that?
How rough is the boat on the Sea of Galilee trip?
I mean, you know, it's somewhat unpredictable, but it's nowadays, of course, they can predict some of those things a lot better. But it's not, when I've been there, it's not been rough. It's not been ultra choppy.
How long is it? How long does the trip take?
It's about a half an hour at the pay, because we'll stop in the middle and sit there for a few minutes and sing and have some scripture reading. The total trip, traveling at a slow speed, about a half an hour if I remember right, something like that. Okay, everybody got one of those? Let me walk you through this. Oh, here we go. We got some folks over here, Evelyn. Raise your hand if you don't have it. Okay. All right, you'll get it in a second. Just keep your hand up if you don't have it, and these guys will make sure you get one. Let's go ahead and start working through it. I'm not going to cover everything here, but there are some pretty important things I need to cover. On page 1, you see the entry requirements. You don't need a visa. All you need is a valid passport. And here's what marks a valid passport. Obviously, it needs to be in date, but it needs to be more than that. It needs to be not expiring within 6 months after your visit to Israel. If your passport will expire within 6 months after your visit, you need to get a new passport. Okay, so you'll see that here, and note that. Also, if you have Arab stamps in your passport, okay, if you've been to Arab countries, two notes to make. One is, if you've been to countries that have some sort of agreement and recognition between them and Israel, all you're going to get is more questions than the rest of us, okay? Both going in and going out, and you can understand that. If you have been to an Arab country that does not have an agreement with Israel, you need to get a new passport, okay? So if you have any question about that, you can talk to Inspiration, or we can even check on that for you, but that's very important. That will be the only sort of hurdle you will face in terms of passport. It needs to be not expire within 6 months after your visit, and it needs to, if you have an Arab stamp from a country that does not have an agreement with Israel, you need to get a new passport. They won't let you in. Okay? All right, Shabbat. That's Sabbath, in case you missed that. Shabbat starts at sundown, around sundown on Friday, and lasts through sundown on Saturday. And you can just be aware that the Jewish shops, businesses, offices, etc., will all be closed on Shabbat. There'll also be a few things that you have to be aware of. In the hotels, not all the workers will be on Shabbat. In addition, they have the Shabbat elevator. In fact, you'll be fascinated by this, because the laws, the Sabbath laws, say that you can't start a fire on the Sabbath, right? Well, the rabbis have said that if you push a button in the elevator, that's starting a fire. It's electrical. And so they have one elevator, even in these modern hotels, they'll have one elevator that's a Shabbat elevator. You don't want on the Shabbat elevator, because it stops at every other floor, whether you push the buttons or not. And that's so the person who's Jewish doesn't have to push any buttons. They simply get off at the closest floor and use the stairs to get where they need to go. So those will be things that you have to work on as well. Let me also tell you that the dining rooms are, for the most part, kosher. And so you will not be able to get meat and milk together. I mean, beef and milk together. So we almost caused an international incident. The first time I went to Israel, there was a man on our trip who decided he just had to have cream with his coffee for dinner. And I'm not making the story up. And, you know, they don't serve it. They don't serve cream, because that's a milk product. And, you know, you don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. Therefore, you can't serve, according to the rabbinical laws, you can't serve meat and milk together. And so you get some sort of cream, you know, non-dairy cream or whatever, some way to get around it. But this guy decided he wanted cream. And so he went back around the corner, sort of toward the kitchen, and found a cart that had some cream on it from breakfast. Well, if he had done that, if we hadn't caught him, the whole restaurant would have been declared non-kosher. The rabbis would have had to come in, do a thorough cleaning, thorough inspection. It would have made a national incident. So just prepare yourself for those sorts of things. Also, breakfasts. Let me just tell you about breakfast. There will be some things you're not used to seeing at breakfast. A lot of fish for breakfast. And they will have some things that you're accustomed to as well. But just expect some differences in food. I love the food there, but just expect those things to happen. Shabbat. I don't think there's anything else I need to tell you about Shabbat. There will be some limited services. I don't know that it's still this way, but for a time, even in the major hotels, they knew we needed to do business, but they knew the Jewish sensitivities, the Orthodox Jewish sensitivities to business. And so you could still go to the counter of the major hotels on Shabbat, but they had these screens up so that the Jewish people didn't have to see them doing business on Shabbat. So, you know, you'll see all those kinds of things. Legalism is an interesting thing. If you want to, there's a great read there about what Shabbat looks like in a Jewish home. You can read that. The holidays, time difference, climate. Let me touch on climate. It varies in the land of Israel. And you can see on page 5 the temperatures in the months we're going to be there. Jerusalem, because of its elevation, you know, everything in the scripture talks about going up to Jerusalem. That's because Jerusalem is at a higher elevation. I want to say 2,900 feet above sea level. I don't remember now. Maybe not quite that much. That doesn't sound right. But anyway, it's up, and therefore the climate is drier, and so there's a greater swing in the temperatures. So even in the summer, when it's really blistering hot in Israel, in the evenings it can be cool. So you'll want to make sure that you have a light jacket, sweater, something. So think cool in the morning, maybe getting pretty warm during the day, depending on where we're touring, where in the land of Israel we're touring. And then at night, as the evening begins, it can get quite cool, particularly in Jerusalem, because of the elevation. Okay, and you can see the temperatures there. If you look at Jerusalem, the average high in early November is about 65, between 75 and 65, probably around 70 when we're going would be the average. And the average low will be about 54. So in the morning, it'll be cool. So make sure you make note of that and prepare for that. Clothing. How do you prepare for clothing? Page 6 there. This is really helpful stuff. I cannot stress to you enough. Forget fashion, okay? Forget fashion, especially when it comes to shoes. Okay, we're going to be hiking because Israel is not it's not Texas. It's not flat. There are a lot of hills, a lot of stones, a lot of stone steps, a lot of elevation and down elevation. In fact, let me just stop here and say, think about your own health. This is a rigorous trip. This is not like an easy tour. There's a lot of walking, a lot of up and down, a lot of in and out of the bus, a lot of up and down inclines, a lot of steps, stone steps, etc. So, you know, consider that. And I would encourage you, if you feel like you can do it, but you haven't really been exercising much or whatever, I'd encourage you to begin a walking routine. Get yourself up to speed, because we're going to do, in some of those days, particularly in Jerusalem, we won't take the bus everywhere. We will walk. So we'll walk several miles. And so you just need to really think about that and plan on good shoes. And can I just give you this piece of advice? I've learned this over several trips now. Break your shoes in. Buy them by late summer. Wear them for weeks before the trip, because you will You will have problems if you don't do that. The tour buses, ladies, can be quite cool, so make sure you have a lightweight jacket or sweater you throw in your backpack on the bus. Now, as far as what you wear, in addition to footwear, see the second paragraph there? There is no need for dressy attire. You will have no occasion when you will need to dress up. So casual is great. And what that means is it's going to be a little cooler, as you saw. So comfortable, cool, and modest clothes. Jeans and slacks, shirts, those are fine. If you wear shorts, and you may want to bring a couple pair of shorts because it could be warm, make sure they're an appropriate length. They need to be like more like Bermuda shorts. The people in Israel, the Orthodox Jews and the Muslims, have a greater sensitivity on the modesty front. It would not be uncommon for a stranger to come up to you and accost you for not being modestly dressed because they're tired of tourists, you know, not respecting their culture. And so you just need to respect that and plan on longer shorts and plan on you know, making sure that you're modestly dressed. There will be days, particularly when we're going to certain Catholic churches, because of, you know, the importance of the sites where they're located, there will be days when you'll need a modesty kit. Let me explain what that means. That means, guys, no shorts. You will have to wear long pants on those occasions. You can do that a couple of different ways. Some guys on our last trip wore those zip-on pants, you know, where you could wear them shorts most of the day, and then you could, in the bus, you won't have a changing place. So don't think you're going to change somewhere. It needs to be something you can shove in your backpack. And so, you know, zip-on leggings to your pants if that's what you want to do, or some loose-fitting pair of pants you can pull on over your shorts. Again, fashion is not the issue. It's strictly modesty to meet the standard that they have. Ladies, what that will mean for you is the same thing. No shorts on those occasions. And if you wear skirts, they'll have to cover the knees. And also, you may not wear, and this is, you just need to leave at home, any sort of tank top type thing. You need to have your shoulders covered. There are certain sites where, you know, my wife even got accosted because she had wore something that went a little too low. And, of course, she's very modest, but it went a little too low for the person, and she had to wear this shirt thing over it. So you have to think about that on the days we have modesty kits. That won't be every day, but there will be occasions when we'll tell you in advance about that. Ladies, you can have, as it mentions here, a wraparound skirt or pull-on pants, whatever's convenient for you. Again, doesn't have to look like the best thing you've ever worn. It just needs to function. Make sure you bring something to cover your head. The sun in Israel is intense, and that's true year-round. If it's not overcast or cloudy, sun's very intense, you will get sunburn in October, November, and you'll get bad sunburn. So make sure you bring a hat, sunscreen as well, because we'll be outside a lot. All right, any questions about the clothing issue? You know, you really won't. The hotels will have those facilities. They're hard to get at. They're also expensive. You know, I would say if you're thinking about that, the simplest thing, and I sometimes do that, I just don't want to take more than I have to, is just say, look, I'm going to bite the bullet and even though it's expensive, have the hotel wash several different outfits of clothes. If you're going to do something, that might be the simplest. Because otherwise, you know, some people like to wash in their sink. You know, just bring certain kinds of clothes that can be washed out easily in the sink and hung up to dry. If you like to do that, that's fine. You know, I'm just, I'd rather not. So I'll let somebody else. No, only on, you will never have to have a head covering, but you will have to have your modesty kit. It involves something covering your knees and making sure your shoulders are all covered, your arms and shoulders. But I don't think there's a place where you have to have a head covering. No, I don't think so. If you do, you know, maybe at the women's section of the Wailing Wall, I haven't been there, but if in the women's section you're required, they will have something. you know, they'll have something you can use. So you won't really have to carry that with you.
Is there a limit to the amount of suitcases?
Yeah, suitcases. Typically on an international flight, and you know this far better than I, you get two suitcases, we'll confirm that, and you get a carry-on. I would suggest if you can condense to one large suitcase that meets the 50-pound limit, they will charge you if your suitcase is over 50 pounds, but 50 pounds or under, one large suitcase and a carry-on, and throw a duffel bag, a collapsible duffel bag or whatever, in your other suitcase, so that on coming back, you got room for the stuff you buy. That'd be my suggestion, but you do that however you want. You can take two cases. The problem will be, of course, everything you take has to be put in and off of the buses. So if everybody takes two cases plus the carry-on, it can get unwieldy. So just be thoughtful in that way. If you need two cases, take two cases. But if you can condense, that's great too. That answer that question? Yeah. What else? Anything else? Yeah, I would just, what I usually carry is a simple backpack. I personally end up taking other stuff that I need. So I take typically a computer bag on the plane, and I just throw a collapsed backpack in my suitcase. And then when we're touring, I'll have the backpack. And what we're probably going to do, and I'll bring you up to speed on this, but I think what we're going to get for each of you is a nice travel Bible that you can have with you, because you don't take your good Bible, but you need a Bible that's a good Bible. So we'll try to get you a travel Bible and also one of those sort of moleskine, whatever they're called, notebooks where you can keep track of notes and also of your pictures and so forth. That can go in your backpack, maybe a water bottle, because you'll want to have water with you. You won't always have access to that out where we are. So, but yeah, I would suggest definitely a backpack, camera, you know, other stuff you can throw in there.
Do our cell phones work on
there? Check with your carrier. It's GSM, so just check with your carrier and see what the rate is. I tell you what I have done and will do is if you have Skype, you can typically get Skype minutes, and then from the hotel, you can do a Skype call for pennies. Back home. So that's what I've typically done as opposed to spending the cell phone minutes, which is huge.
Are you implying it's complimentary internet at both hotels?
I'm not implying that. Okay. No. I'm saying it may be cheaper. I don't remember now. It seems like on one of them it is, but there are several different hotels. I'm not sure exactly which ones we're staying at. But if it's whether it's complimentary or not, it still may be cheaper to get the internet access and to Skype as opposed to making the telephone calls, because that can get really expensive on most carriers. Check your carrier, see what it is for you. Yeah. No, you don't need, we're not going to be doing that kind of hiking for the most part, you know, rough hiking. It's just going to be, you got to think old cities, old places, so you've got stone, worn stone, gravel in like Beit Shan. You're hiking around there, gravel and stone. So that's what you need to think. It's not that we're going to, you know, you may want to go out somewhere where others don't, on the stones near the Sea of Galilee or whatever, but you don't really need true hiking shoes. You just need something stable and something really comfortable. No heels, ladies, leave them at home. Everything comfortable and stable. Okay? Anything else on that? Any questions on the modesty kits? You ladies got that? And guys as well? All right, you can read there a little bit about the cuisine. Notice that box, the blue box on page 6, you don't need to worry about water and fresh produce. It's not like traveling in an undeveloped country. I've never had any issues there. Obviously, if you are prone, if you have a very sensitive digestive system and you are prone to traveler's diarrhea, make sure you just pack, probably a good idea, period, to pack some antidiarrheal medicine with your stuff. But I've never had any issues there, so just be aware of that. No, but you can get it in the hotel. All right, we've mentioned phone service. Electricity, let me briefly explain that. Check all the devices you plan to take. And most modern technology, like my computer, my phone charger, all of that, iPad charger, all of that is dual voltage. In other words, you can use it on 110, you can use it on 220. It takes both. But check everything you plan to take. Hair dryers are notorious, ladies. Those are typically 110. That's U.S. current. Israel uses 220. So if you just take, there are two different kinds of electrical adapters. There's what's called an adapter. All that does is change the prong setting on the end of your device to the prong setting that will fit in their wall. If you take a 110 hair dryer, and it's not rated for higher than 110, and plug it into a 220 outlet, you will get your hair dry very quickly, but that'll be the last time you'll use that blow dryer. Okay, so you need to make sure that either, what I would recommend is only carry with you items that have the dual voltage, 110 and 220. Many modern devices do, but check yours out, whatever you plan to take. And that means all you'll need to take are some of those adapters. You'll want several of them because if you want to recharge your phone, you want to recharge your camera, you want to recharge something else on the same night, you know, you don't need just one adapter because you won't be able to do everything you want to do. So take several of those. If you have to take something that is not dual voltage, then you can buy a power converter that will take the 220 that's coming out of the wall and bump it down to 110. That's a different device. Make sure you're getting the right thing, okay? But I would encourage you as much as possible just to take the devices that have the dual voltage on them. Some of the hotels will have hair dryers, I believe. That's not something I've used a lot of, so I don't remember. Sorry. Currency, you can take some cash with you, but it's very easy to use either your credit card, depending on whether or not you'd like the exchange rate. You can also use the ATMs. They're accessible in many places, and you can get shekels. They will not take your American money. For the most part, they have no interest in dollars, no interest in change, so don't take any of that. You can either use your credit card or you can get shekels either here. The exchange rate's actually probably a little better there. Also, the value-added tax, you can read about that. If you buy something, you'll notice at the beginning of page 10, that refunds can only be claimed if the goods were purchased in authorized stores and the purchase exceeds $100. And it has to be the right kind of goods. You can read about all that. So if you buy several expensive souvenirs, you can get that VAT tax, the value-added tax, refunded to you. But you have to keep the receipts. You can read about all that, how to do that. But that's just thing to be aware of. Okay. Let's see here. You can read, by the way, safety, page 11. A lot of people wonder about safety in Israel. If you stay out of the occupied territories, the West Bank, Gaza, you are as safe in Israel as about anywhere in the world. You know, can something happen? Of course. You know, we live in a dangerous world, but it happens in Dallas and Colorado and everywhere else. But it is a safe place to be. I will warn you up front that you will initially be a little unsettled because Israeli soldiers have to carry their weapons with them. And so you will be standing next to people on the streets who are holding, you know, these automatic weapons. But you'll get used to that and actually feel a little safer because, you know, nothing's going down very soon. So, okay, let's see. You can read about the facts and figures and all of that. Go to page 17. Health and safety here. You don't need any vaccinations. None are required for U.S. or Canadian visitors to Israel. But notice the blue box. If you visited a country prior to coming to Israel where some of those diseases are current, then you will need a vaccination certificate. So just be aware of that. Some of you travel a lot more and been in some hard places. Make sure you note that. And make sure you, if you're going to get vaccinations, that you do that 4 to 6 weeks out. Make sure you have a travel medical kit, and there's some things listed there that are a good thing to take. Make sure you have your own prescriptions, motion sickness if you're medication, if you're prone to that at all, antidiarrheal, you know, some aspirin, Tylenol, whatever. Some hydrocortisone cream is a good idea as well. Sunscreen, etc. We'll talk about jet lag next time. And the rest of those things we'll talk about next time as well. Go to, you can see the hotels, the kinds of hotels that we will be staying in. Again, I don't think it's been finalized, I believe. We have reservations. I haven't heard yet which exact hotels. I'll let you know as we know that. Look to the back pages now, 27 and 28. This is just reminding you about the 6 months validity on your passport, the luggage we talked about. You're going to get luggage tags from Inspiration. You'll want them on everything so that the transfers are simple. And then there's some suggestions for packing there as you think about planning for what you want to take with you. And notice the last thing, your prepaid gratuities include, this is already prepaid as part of the package, your bus driver, your tour guide, the hotel, and other miscellaneous services. They do not include any tips to porters at the airport if you want somebody to handle your luggage, and that's listed there as well. You're certainly welcome if you really enjoy your guide and your bus driver. You're welcome to give them more tip than they will receive as from the package that we'll all give, but you don't have to do that. Okay? So really the only expenses you will have will be lunches. If you want to eat lunch on those days, you'll have two meals provided, but the third meal will be on, you'll be on your own, and then for souvenirs and those kind of things. Okay? Any questions about preparation? Start thinking. If you have questions, don't hesitate to call and ask. We'll be happy to, if we know, I will let you know. If I don't, I'll try to find out. We'll check. Evelyn can remind me. Evelyn, if you would, to check on the, see, getting a group price on these pictorial directories or pictorial libraries of Bible lands. It seems like there was one other thing we were going to check on. Somebody asked me, Ken, the price for the, we want to find out the costs for the optional trips, the Western Wall trips and so forth. Yeah?
Yeah, the question for those who want extended trips, do you arrive earlier or stay later? I assume there'll be a mini time, like up front. You don't need all the same thing.
No, we don't all have to. If you have miles or, you know, whatever, people do different things. You just need to arrange that with Inspiration and set up with them of how you're going to get to the hotel where we'll be staying. They can help you arrange that if you want to work that out. Yeah.
Are we scheduled during any major holidays?
We're not supposed to be. Okay, we try to avoid major holidays. We're behind. We're not going to be there for the major fall season of holidays, and it's too early for Hanukkah, so I think we're okay. Well, they're typically our ATMs there in the airport, but you know there'll be enough guys around that if you don't have shekels and you need help with your luggage, we'll be happy to help you get it. You don't have to tip us. Yeah, you will. If I remember right, you leave in the late afternoon, and then you travel. You have typically a stop, depending on. You know, there are a lot of variables there. But eventually you get to Tel Aviv in the afternoon, and they take you to the hotel. You have dinner, a brief, very brief meeting, and you get to bed. That's when you sack out, yeah. If it's a layover, it's just for transition purposes. I've done it both ways. It just varies on the flight plan and what they can get and the prices and all of that. But on one occasion, I think we just refueled, maybe at Charles de Gaulle, I don't remember. On another occasion, we had a brief layover. So another occasion, we flew from L.A., which is where I was going from, to New York. We had our layover in New York, and then we had a direct flight from New York. So it just depends on the flight plan that's laid out. Yeah, that's a great point. You just make a note in your calendar sometime before you leave, a week or two before you leave, to notify your credit card company that you're going to be traveling and where you're going to be so that they know that it's all legit when you start putting charges on that card in Israel and they don't put a hold on it. That would not be fun. If I remember right, it's a little of both. I want to say that, it's been long enough now. It's 2008. I don't remember for sure, but I think it's both. I think we ended up needing shekels on some occasions because it was, when you're in the old city in Jerusalem, one of my favorite memories is we went in this little hole in the wall, literally hole in the wall, falafel stand. It was great food, but it was just, they didn't know what a credit card looked like. They just wanted shekels. So it varies. What else? Anything else?
Are we going to be assigned what bus? Or is it like mayhem?
No. You'll, it'll all be laid out. Okay. All right, here's the deal. You've got a lot of things to consider. These books are up here. You can take a look at them if you want to do that. And if you have any other questions, come up and see me. If you have questions between now and when you get the notice for the next meeting, feel free to call or whatever. But we'll plan on letting you know somewhere late summer, early fall, because there's really no point in preparing you with, what you're going to see in Israel much before that. So it'll be somewhere probably in September would be my guess. When we will have our next meeting and we'll sort of go through. I'll walk you through the land, what you're going to see, give you sort of the beginning of our study tour of Israel, just to prepare you ahead of time. Okay? Anything else before we close? All right, let's pray together. Our Father, we are so excited about this opportunity. We thank you that in your goodness you've allowed us to do it. Thank you that we can experience this together. But Father, we're so grateful that it will provide such an insight for us as we read and study your word. Lord, I pray that you would prepare us in every way, help all of us as we make the plans and pull the things together that we'll need. And Lord, even begin to read and prepare our minds for what we'll see and experience. I pray that you'd be pleased to make this a wonderful lifetime experience that we will never forget, and that we will never come to our Bibles the same way as we did before. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.